We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
I never once went to a meeting, never once issued a statement, never once even gave an endorsement in the 2 years Prop 8 was going.
Well, let me just say this really clearly. We support Proposition 8. And if you believe what the Bible says about marriage, you need to support Proposition 8.
When a university invites somebody for an honorary degree, for a commencement speaker, what you are really saying to the students is, this man, we agree with him, we hold him up as a model to you.
The battles that we fought in the 80s, conflicts with the culture, humanly speaking, we have lost all those battles.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
I like these kind of days. Simple, straightforward, 2 hours. Two topics, more or less. In the first hour, it's audio open lines. We'll start with one topic. Rick Warren seems to be flip-flopping on his support, his past support for Proposition 8. After supporting it, I think it's pretty fair to say, he supported Proposition 8 that would have banned gay marriage in California. He is now saying, in various places, to the point of exhaustion, he is saying that he is not anti-gay activist and that he never really officially supported Prop 8. Some are wondering why this apparent flip-flop. We'll play an MSNBC panel discussion on that for you and get your reaction to it here during the first hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. As I said, audio open lines live this Tuesday afternoon, April the 14th for the first hour, and then in the second hour of the program, Dr. Peter Scare will join us from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll talk about the resurrection of Christ according to the four gospel accounts. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, or you can email questions or comments to us, especially call or email during this first hour, audio open lines, talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Okay, so Rick Warren has slowly but surely emerged from being America's pastor, author of the best-selling The Purpose-Driven Life, founder of 40 Days of Purpose, highly influential within Christian circles. He's slowly emerged to be something a little bit more. Leading up to the presidential election in 2008, he held a series of forums at his Saddleback Church, one, most notably, an actual debate between the two presidential candidates at his church. And from that point on, he really has become the evangelical that the media really likes to watch and pay attention to. And of course, with that attention comes the parsing of everything he has to say. They bring him on to talk about various subjects. And, well, what they discovered shortly after that presidential debate or that presidential forum at Saddleback Church, at Warren's church, is that what Pastor Warren will do is say something, and then a little later he'll kind of nuance what he said. And he got in a little trouble for that with the media right around the presidential election. And now, with Prop 8, he said he supports it, and now he says he never officially supported it. I want your reaction to this MSNBC hardball discussion on Rick Warren's alleged flip-flop on California's Prop 8. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
For those of you tuning in this morning expecting to hear from Pastor Rick Warren, we were too. But the pastor's representatives canceled moments before the scheduled interview, saying that Mr. Warren is sick from exhaustion.
Welcome back. Of course, that was George Stephanopoulos yesterday morning. A week ago, Pastor Warren said this, however, to Larry King.
I am not an anti-gay or anti-gay marriage activist. Never have been, never will be. During the whole Proposition 8 thing, I never once went to a meeting, never once issued a statement, never once even gave an endorsement in the 2 years Prop 8 was going. the week before the vote, somebody in my church said, Pastor Rick, what do you think about this? And I sent a note to my own members that said, I actually believe that marriage is really should be defined, that that definition should be saved between a man and a woman.
Well, that statement may have sounded odd to many people who heard Pastor Warren in a video back before the election. Here he is in that video.
Now, let me just say this really clearly. We support Proposition 8. And if you believe what the Bible says about marriage, you need to support Proposition 8.
Okay, those are the two statements. That's MSNBC's Hardball, Chris Matthews. They're going to be talking in just a moment about those two statements, how they can be reconciled with one another. I want your reaction to it. He says during the push for Proposition 8 that it should be supported. You should support it, too, if you believe the Bible's definition of marriage. And then later, last couple of days on Larry King, saying he's not an anti-gay marriage activist and he never officially supported Proposition 8. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April. Talk about Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop on California's Proposition 8. 1-877-623-6943. Does this kind of thing surprise you? How would you reconcile the two statements if it were your pastor making these statements? 1-877-623-MY-I-E or talk back at issuesetc.org. Are you disappointed with Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop? 1-877-623-6943.
Well, an aide to Rick Warren emailed Politico's Mike Allen an explanation which said, quote, when Pastor Warren told Larry King that he never campaigned for California's Proposition 8, he was referring to not participating in the official two-year organized advocacy effort specific to the ballot initiative in that state. Based on his focus and leadership on other compassion issues, because he's a pastor, not an activist, in response to inquiries from church members, he issued an email and video message to his congregation days before the election, confirming where he and Saddleback Church stood on this issue. Well, with us now is U.S. News' Dan Gilgoff. He'll be with us in a moment. And Politico's Mike Allen. Mike, you first. Let me get to this. What is this going on? I mean, he sounds like, I'm not going to name names, but certain politicians we've dealt with over the years who say one thing and then later explain what they meant, which was totally different than what they implied, because they wanted to imply something different. He said he didn't put out any kind of a statement. He said all he did was knock out a note to some of his members. It turns out that note was a statement specific to Proposition 8, which he did on camera as a video statement. So what is it? What's he up to? Is he playing one way to the mainstream audience that watches Larry King and playing differently to his church membership and to the people on his side of the cultural issue?
Well, Chris, that's exactly the danger here, and you have set up the facts exactly right. There's a danger here that Reverend Warren, who's done a lot of good, has brought a lot of people to Christ, is going to look like the parsing parson here. One of his aides told me that he feels a little bit like the Civil War soldier who wore a Union coat and Confederate pants.
Okay, Matthews has actually asked the right question there, and that is, is it wanting to give one impression and then not wanting to give an impression? Playing to one audience, that is the Larry King audience, the mainstream media audience, saying, look, Prop 8, I personally support it, but I never had any official backing for the thing. And then with his own congregation and his inside circle, which includes a lot more people than his own congregation, of course, because Rick Warren is about the most influential Christian pastor in the United States. A different message. To the insiders, one message. To the media, a different message. Do you think that's what Rick Warren is doing on Prop 8? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Looking for your general reaction. Are you disappointed? Are you surprised at Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop? When he's talking to his congregation, I am for Prop 8. When he's talking to Larry King and Larry King's audience, I never supported Prop 8. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Back to MSNBC's Hardball panel discussion.
He got shot at by both sides. And here's what's happening. The mainstream is after Pastor Rick, as he calls himself, for not clearing up this clear contradiction that you pointed to. And evangelicals aren't happy because they're saying, why are you ashamed of this position? Why are you walking away from being against gay marriage? Concerned that he's trying to curry the favor of the mainstream out of fear of man.
Well, is he trying to be Billy Graham, someone who was able to do both, be an evangelic and also a popular figure? In other words, a person of hard religious conviction, but a man who had such charm and easygoing political sense that he was able to reach a larger audience, at least in terms of his good intentions.
Well, and Chris, Pastor Warren has done that extremely successfully. He's sort of God who wrote the Bible. He's the best-selling author of all time. A Purpose-Driven Life is in more hands than any other book in the United States except for the Bible. And so it's clear what he meant here. What he meant here was, I don't want to be a cultural warrior. My calling is not to deal with gay marriage. He wanted to make it clear he was not beating the drum on that issue. All of that is true. The problem was, what he said was, that he didn't endorse it, and he's going to have to correct the record about that specific literal point.
Okay, I want your reaction. We'll hear more of MSNBC's Hardball panel discussion on Pastor Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop on Proposition 8 in California. After this break, 1-877-623-6943. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April, audio open lines, issues, etc. Your questions, your comments, and your reaction to Rick Warren's two, what they appear to be two different statements that, of course, he will at some point have to reconcile in some form or another. When he says, I'm in favor of Prop 8, doesn't that qualify as an endorsement? Can he later say on Larry King, I didn't endorse Prop 8? He admitted on Larry King to sending both the letter to his congregation members and the video wherein he, well, endorsed Prop 8. Or maybe he didn't. What do you think? 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-IE. Or talk back at issuesetc.org. When we come back, more on Rick Warren's flip-flop.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Thanks to God's gift of the internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Villa in Finland is online. Villa, welcome to Issues Etc.
This thing about forgiveness, I think Jesus forgave on the cross, and so did Stephen, and this shows only that the Holy Spirit can do that. That was what I wanted to say.
Villa, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Finland.
Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world. Issues Etc.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with couple if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
You are my soul.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back, Christy Leckband, William Bradley Jr., Joy Fricke, Chris Froiland, Aaron Yeager, Bob Yeager, Carol Peterson, Patricia Unruh, Linda Hobratch, and Tom Regan. Thanks for your support.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Some audio open lines on this Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April. Rick Warren. Well, some of the media are saying caught with his hand in the cookie jar, at least verbally, saying back before Prop 8 in California was decided that he supported Prop 8. That's that gay marriage amendment to California's Constitution. He supported it. He told his congregation in writing and on video that he supported it. They should support it too, laying out his and his congregation's official position on Prop 8. Then, this week, saying on Larry King, he never endorsed Prop 8, and he doesn't want to be known as an anti-gay or anti-gay marriage activist. Is he trying to have his cake and eat it too? Is he trying to do what Billy Graham did so well? I mean, that's the question that's been raised on this MSNBC panel discussion with Chris Matthews and several of several advocates from the media. Look, Billy Graham was able to do this beautifully. He was able to take these firm stands with his audience and then also serve as a public figure that had this broad appeal. Of course, Billy Graham, think about it this way. Billy Graham didn't have to deal with gay marriage. Billy Graham didn't have to deal with a lot of the issues that a present-day Billy Graham, and I'm going to talk about Billy himself, I'm talking about whoever's going to be his successor, if that's Rick Warren or someone else, we don't know. But the Billy Graham of the 21st century, whoever that turns out to be, doesn't have the luxury of being able to wait until these subjects like gay marriage come along. Billy Graham just didn't have to take a position on it because it wasn't a subject that was so high on people's radar. Rick Warren doesn't have that luxury. So he appears to be flip-flopping on this. When he says, I'm in favor of Prop 8 and you should be too, does that qualify as an endorsement? When he says on Larry King he didn't endorse it, does it sound a little odd to you? 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MYIE. If Rick Warren were your pastor, what counsel would you give him? He's going to have to straighten this out. He's feeling under the weather. He's not making media appearances. But when he does, what counsel would you give him for straightening out what appears to be a flip-flop? Maybe it's just a misunderstanding. 1-877-623-MYIE or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Well, I think this is all in the nuance, but if you sit down before a TV camera and you approve a script and then you recite the script on camera, you're putting out a broadcast, basically, aren't you? I mean, you're not exactly hiding your positions under your pillow.
Well, of course. And something else that Reverend Warren said, and I think that you and I can both sympathize with, he says anybody who makes a lot of public statements should get at least 10% grace. And I think everybody will agree with that. But you have to, as pastors will tell you, own your stuff. There was a misstatement of fact here. He's going to have to come out and fix it. I checked today. He doesn't have an interview scheduled. Eventually, he's going to do that. But he... and then he's free to go on to make this larger point, which I think is true, that he doesn't want this issue to be associated with it, that he was, it's true, that he was not campaigning for it, he was not out rallying for it. All that's true, but you just have to be careful about your literal words, especially when, like you, because of his success, people are looking for you to stumble.
Well, let's go to Bob, let's go to Dan Gilgorf. Dan, what do you make of this? Because the thing about religion is, and it's what's sticky about it, is that it's belief. And it is, in some sense, an exclusive belief. You believe one thing is true fundamentally in life. The purpose of your being is one is your religious belief. And people are going to disagree with that. And it's not going to be a popular statement because it's going to exclude other people generally. Is this what he's trying to do, make himself inclusive when he really is a religious leader who has to be, at some to some extent, exclusive? Some will be saved and some won't.
Yeah, and I think what he's trying to do is something that's pretty unique in American politics and in American religion, and that is to try to carve out something of a middle path in both a religious America and a political America that has become very polarized. And so what I think is so fascinating about this episode is that the last time that Rick Warren really reared his head publicly was on January 20th when he delivered the invocation at President Obama's inauguration. Of course, you remember, that caused a huge outcry among liberal activists, among gay rights activists. So what Warren did was really disappeared for a few months, didn't give any interviews whatsoever to let this political storm blow over. Then the moment that he does come back, he grants this interview to Larry King, and he weighs in on the gay marriage question. He doesn't come out forceful enough for it, seems to disown his support for Proposition 8, and now all of a sudden it's the right that's angry at him.
Okay, are you angry at Rick Warren? Do you think he's flip-flopped on this one? when he came out and said to his congregation and in the video that he sent out there, which of course isn't going to stay inside that circle, I'm in favor of Prop 8. In other words, I'm in favor of a constitutional amendment for the state of California that would ban gay marriage. And he said, if you believe what the Bible says about marriage, you should be in favor of it too. And by the way, that's not a violation of any tax code for the church. You can, as a pastor and as a congregation advocate, advocate for certain issues and even certain laws and measures. You just can't advocate for certain candidates, which he wasn't doing. So that's really not on the table here, but I wanted to make that clear as well. And then later, after the little bit of a firestorm that falls when you give the inauguration invocation, no small feat. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that is left to the Billy Grahams of this world, isn't it? Then after that storm is blown over, you show up and you say, well, you know, I never endorsed it. I don't want to be associated so completely with this issue. Is that a flip-flop? 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Here's the remainder of that MSNBC panel discussion on Rick Warren's alleged flip-flop on Proposition 8 in California.
And so I think it's telling that anytime he comes out and makes a public appearance, he's ticking off one side politically. But what's so unique about him is that it's first the left, and now he comes out after a 3-month silence, and it's the right that's up in arms.
You know, Mike and Dan, I was at an event of the Aspen Institute out in Aspen, Colorado, a couple of years ago, and he was a very nice guy to an audience, a large audience of different kinds of people. It was a secular crowd. And a woman a bit younger than me stood up and said, well, I'm a Jewish woman. Can I be saved? Can I go to heaven? And he said, by my religious lights, no. It was a very cold, you could say, answer, but he said it in a very mannerly way. And isn't this a classic situation where a person's religious beliefs are never going to sell to the mainstream audience? They're never going to be acceptable to everyone because it's obviously his view, which is obviously going to turn off people who don't share it in a most fundamental way, Mike. How can he mainstream evangelicalism? I just wonder how he can do it.
Well, you can't. You can't round off the edges, but be careful how you use mainstream. Christians are a majority of this country. It's not a minority that he's talking to there. But you're right that if he sugarcoats what he says, if he waters it down in the pursuit of his effort to pursue what he calls the gospel of grace, that is to emphasize issues that we all can agree on, which would include concern for the environment, compassion for gay people, other issues like that, you are going to lose your base. And Chris, you know, one of the first laws in politics is you have to keep your base before right. You can go out and be successful elsewhere. So what he has to do...
Dan, where's he going to end up? Is he end up going to back up? He's going to support Prop 8, or is he going to go back to a more generalized, popular seeking position here?
Well, what he's going to do, he's going to support Prop 8 and make that clear. But what's happening here is that we are witnessing Rick Warren in this really fascinating moment where he is catapulting himself from a national and local leader onto the international stage. And he is attaining a level of influence that is really unknown even to him. And yeah. So what happens is you have a congregationally based pastor who's used to speaking to, sure, tens of thousands of people, but they're all like-minded evangelicals who are turning out to see him on Sunday. Now what happens is he's going to, you know, an invocation for the president, an appearance on national television, weighing in on his political issues. This is a guy who doesn't even have a speechwriter. He doesn't have people who he vets things by. So now he's talking as if he was talking to fellow Christians who will cut him some slack, and he's not anymore. And I think he's going to have to be a little bit more prepared going forward.
Well, he should use you as his advisor. You were very well spoken on that matter. Thank you, Dan Gilgoff of U.S. News and Mike Gowan of Politico, as always, sir.
All right, that's the MSNBC panel discussion on Rick Warren's alleged flip-flop. I want to know what you think about this story. Call or email us now. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. It's audio open lines this Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April, 1-877-623-MYIE. You can email us right here in the studio your thoughts on Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop on the gay marriage issue, 1-877-623-6943, or talkback@issuesetc.org. You know, Chris Matthews seems to get it. He sees what I think what's going on here to a certain degree rather clearly. If you're going to step into the naked public square and try and appeal, or at the very least not offend, you're not going to be able to take all of your viewpoints as informed by Scripture with you. You're going to have to leave some of them behind. If you want broad appeal, especially through the media, nothing wrong with the media. This is part of the media. If you want broad appeal, as a Christian in the naked public square and not to offend and only talk about those things upon which everyone can agree, you're going to leave some of your convictions behind one way or the other. Now, you can stand in the naked public square as a Christian with all your convictions intact, but don't expect to have broad appeal and don't expect to not offend and don't expect people not to become upset when you say things like, you know, gay marriage is just not right. And it's also wrong. Now, think about this. Evangelicalism for the last 30 years has been trying to walk that tightrope with the culture. Well, not so much. That's not a tightrope with the culture. What they've been trying, the tightrope has been tied around the name of the neck of evangelicalism, and the culture's been leading evangelicalism around by the nose for the last 30 years. And evangelicalism has said, wow, we seem kind of popular with the media. We have general appeal. We've found a way to be Christians in the culture without offending anyone. And now they're realizing that that's not really possible. It also explains why broadly in evangelicalism, the message of the cross, the most offensive thing about Christianity of all, is so seldom mentioned. More audio open lines after this, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesztc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. John Engelbeck, Kathy Coulter, Hans Bolstad, Pamela Stosser, David and Judy Sager, Lauren Shate, Steve Elsie, Chris Griffith, Lisa Backron, and Bryce Bard. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Bonnie Urbay is a PBS television host and a contributing editor to U.S. News & World Report. Recently, she cited the increased demand for abortion because of the economy. She said more deaths of unborn babies was no tragedy. It's a good decision which financially benefits society. But it seems the prevailing opinion is America should spend its way out of our economic troubles. This means we should have as many babies as possible to create more consumers. The government could issue each new baby a credit card with a birth certificate. But what the politically liberal Ms. Urbay has problems with is the government spending money on more babies. Her answer is let's abort them instead. And they say liberals are supposed to be the compassionate ones? I don't think so.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
So do you think that Rick Warren's actually changed his mind on this thing? I mean, during the Prop 8 fight in California, right on the eve of the election that would have decided this for the California voters, he says, I am in favor of Prop 8. And now, as late as a week ago, he's saying on Larry King, I never endorsed it. I don't want to be known as an anti-gay or anti-gay marriage activist. Well, you know, like it or not, Rick, you're the most famous pastor in the United States. When you say that you're in favor of Prop 8, you kind of become an anti-gay marriage activist. Even though you may not want to be known as one, you may not intend to be one, when you, as they said on that MSNBC panel, when you catapult yourself into the public spotlight at a national level and go from being the most influential pastor in Christian circles to trying to be the most influential pastor in America— the things you endorse, you will be viewed as an activist on that. Those things that you do not endorse, you will be viewed as an activist on that because people listen to what you say. So you think he's flip-flopped, Rick Warren on Prop 8, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Do you think this is a symptom of the greater trend in evangelicalism over the last 30 years to try and be popular in the culture? And a lot of time and money has been spent in evangelicalism trying to be popular in the culture. And a lot of it has been taken the form basically of letting the culture dictate the message and the means of bringing that message to people. It was, used to be called church growth. I don't know what it's called now. Do you think he's going to be able to cross over the way Billy Graham was able to cross over? Billy Graham didn't have gay marriage to deal with. And so one wonders whether or not Billy Graham could have walked that line, the one that Rick Warren appears to be trying to walk. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Jeff in Philadelphia emails us. The shocking thing, he says, is that Matthews and company understand what believers, that believers have to take an unpopular position and that they can do so in an agreeable manner. They do seem to understand that. A cursory reading of the Old Testament prophets should cause any Christian minister to be concerned if they are popular with the public at large. Well, that's actually it's good insight. Jeff, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Philadelphia. It seems Chris Matthews understands the real dilemma here for Rick Warren. That if you're trying to have broad appeal, and if you want to, as Chris Matthews says, if you want to sell it to the mainstream, you're not going to be able to take positions like this and stand by them as firmly as you could if you're not trying to have that popular, broad, mainstream appeal. What about the rest of you? 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. This comes from Don in Kansas. Rick Warren is a typical postmodern leader. There's no stability in their thinking. Most of the time they go with the prevailing winds of the time they live in. There's no substance to their message. The best advice for him is to teach the scriptures and no more. Don, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Kansas. There is a hint of postmodernism in this, isn't there? When we hear Rick Warren talk about it, giving public figures who make as many public statements as he does 10% grace, I don't know what that means. I mean, I know what grace is in the Christian context. I don't know what it means when you're making public statements in the mainstream media, 10% grace. We expect our politicians to mean what they say and say what they mean. Imprecise language generally gets them in trouble every single time. We had one politician, Chris Matthews, made reference to President Bill Clinton, who was a master at nuancing and parsing his own language. And a lot of people thought at the time that President Clinton got a pass from the media on his ability to nuance imprecise language. And they're not going to give that. They're not going to give that kind of pass to Rick Warren. But he does seem to be trying to pull that, doesn't he? I'm in favor of it, but I don't endorse it. I'm against gay marriage, but I'm not an anti-gay marriage activist. I want everyone to know my position on it, but I don't want to be seen as a national figure with leading the charge on any of these issues. They used to call that having your cake and eating it too.
Not to psychologize on this, but I've worked with people like this. They're very talented, very creative. I like to refer to them as contrarians. And if they see somebody being affiliated or labeled as going with the right, they want to move left. They don't want to be, you know, I've heard this said, I want to be like Jesus.
I don't want to be pigeonholed.
Put a label on me.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much that comes into play, Rick Warren. You know, he had that debate or forum, and obviously John McCain came out very favorable in that thing. He did give the prayer at the inauguration. He mentioned the Trinity. He probably angered some of the people on the left with that prayer. And so could it be that maybe he's like, I got to go left now? I'm being seen as too much of the religious right. That's the old guard.
Yeah, I think that might be true. Now, I have to be pretty certain that Jeff isn't talking about me when he says he's working with one of these contrarians, because I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I think I've spent the last 10 years or so trying to be pigeonholed as much as I possibly can.
I've worked with lots of talent.
I like being pigeonholed. It's not me. I know it's not me.
It's not Craig.
Well, no, certainly not.
It could be me, but I don't know.
But in any event, you know the kind of person who says, look, when I see the crowd walking this way, their natural impulse is to stand still and turn around and go the other direction. Maybe not for any good reason whatsoever, except that they don't want to be pigeonholed. They don't want to go along with the crowd. And could it be, I think it's a good question Jeff raises, could it be that Rick Warren is one of those kind of guys who doesn't want to be pigeonholed? He doesn't want to be seen going with the prevailing winds. That would be odd given the fact that, well, some might say he's generated the prevailing winds in evangelicalism for a lot of years. But he doesn't want to be labeled. The problem is, you step out into the naked public square, you're going to be labeled one way or the other, and you really can't control the labels that people attach to you. That's part of my philosophy. The reason I've spent the last 10 years trying to be pigeonholed is because it's one very feeble way of trying to control the labels that are put on you. Not that you really can. But if you say something is wrong and you don't think people should support it, and you're Rick Warren, you will be viewed as leading the charge, even if you're not leading the charge. What kind of advice would you give to Rick Warren if he were your pastor and he says, look, I got to go straighten this thing out. I've made two statements in the public square that people are interpreting as contradictory, and I need to straighten this out. How should I straighten this out? What should I say? I'm not in favor of gay marriage, but I don't want people labeling me as an anti-gay marriage activist. What do I say? How would you advise them? 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Another thing that surprised me on this, Todd, is that in this internet age, a guy that's as seeker sensitive as Pastor Warren, I mean, there's a public record of his statements. It reminds me that some of the leaders in our church body who still act like they can control the message like they could back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s before the internet and with YouTube. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a public record. I mean, it's hard to believe that Pastor Warren doesn't realize in the 21st century that you got to be careful what you say because people can view it all over the world of what statements you've made in the past.
Well, I agree. There's a remarkable similarity in the kind of the astonishment that Warren seems to be experiencing here. Hey, I said something, 6 months ago, and now I'm saying something slightly different. What are you people getting on my case for? Well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Pastors of megachurches generally trend, not all of them, but generally tend to surround themselves with people who tell them yes. Look it up in the dictionary. It's called a sycophant, a yes man. They surround themselves with these kind of people. No one tells them no, and very few people will hold them accountable. And you thereby you get kind of the illusion that you actually can control information. Especially if you have people around you kind of steering the information in your direction. And it leads to a remarkable lack of accountability. Jeff mentioned the leaders of our own church body. An astonishing, shocking, I'd say almost horrifying lack of accountability when you think you control the information. Hey, it doesn't matter. We write it, they read it, and everyone believes it. It doesn't matter what we do. It's what we say we did. That's what matters, because we write it, they read it, and everyone believes it. Well, those days are over. Whether you're a corporation, a government, or a church body, you no longer control the information. No one does. And we have entered an age where when you say something over here, it's going to be heard over there instantaneously, not by one or two, but by hundreds or thousands. And what Rick Warren says to his congregation in private on a video in a letter to the members is going to be read and seen by the world. Well, it was, wasn't it? And that's really what he's having to answer for right now. It's Audio Open Lines this Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April. Our call-in number 1-877-622-3-6943, 877-622-3-MY-I-E. When we come back from our break, we'll move on to another issue discussed recently on Hardball. A discussion between Christopher Hitchens and a representative of the Family Research Council about, is America a Christian nation? 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. After 10 more minutes of audio open lines on this Tuesday afternoon, we'll spend the second hour of our program on the most important subject we could deal with this week, or any week, the resurrection of Christ according to the four Gospels. Dr. Peter Scare, Assistant Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest for that second hour, and you can join us as well. 10 more minutes of open lines. Still want your thoughts on Rick Warren's apparent flip-flop. Do you think he's just the product of postmodernism, where words mean what you want them to mean when you say them, and if you say them later, they may mean something different? 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc.
Christine Flandermeyer, Ben and Mary McMillan, Jason Stevens, Pastor Don Nidham, Pastor Robert Lee Jensen, Pastor Arthur Litke, Ray Muhorter, Glenn Goiterslow, Curtis Grody, and Robert Bailey. Thanks for your support.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
No ditto heads allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've interviewed four members of the President's Council on Bioethics since President Obama announced his decision to allow federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. Dr. Robert George.
In all the talk about curing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and so forth, who shuffled off the stage is the victim, the tiny embryonic human being who will now be sacrificed, treated as disposable research material.
Dr. Gilbert Mylander.
Science itself always has moral agendas at work. It's not as if it's value-free. If we suppose that it's entirely neutral with respect to moral questions, it's not.
Dr. William Hurlbut.
Bottom line is whether we as a society are going to endorse the instrumental use of human life at its earliest stages in scientific research.
And Dr. Leon Cass.
He simply said, I think this is the right thing to do. I respect your opinion, but there was no argument other than cures will be forthcoming. That's an argument that only shows a very shallow understanding of the moral question.
Defending life from beginning to end. Issues, etc. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to try and get as much of this in as we can. Christopher Hitchens, famous new atheist, talking on Hardball with an advocate from the Family Research Council on whether or not America is a Christian nation. I think you can probably tell who's going to take which side of the debate on that one, but it's interesting nonetheless. It's audio open lines for the next 10 minutes. Of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE or talk back at issuesetc.org. Now, whether or not you believe America was or is a Christian nation, it certainly is something that continues as a debate, especially since the new atheists came on the scene. They say it may have been, but it shouldn't have been, and it certainly isn't anymore, and American can do very well without being a Christian nation. But I want your reaction to this MSNBC Hardball discussion between Christopher Hitchens and an advocate from the Family Research Council. Our call in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Here's the question. Welcome back to Hardball, incidentally. Are we witnessing the fall of Christianity in America? According to a new Newsweek poll, 62% of Americans consider the United States a Christian nation. That's down from 69% during the tail end of the Bush presidency last year. And a whopping 68% say religion is losing its influence in American life. Ken Blackwell is with the Family Research Council, and Christopher Hitchens is a Vanity Fair columnist and the author of the must-read, God is Not Great, which has just come out in paperback Christopher, let's start with you. Let me ask you a question. What does it mean, if anything, when people refer to the United States of America as a Christian nation?
It's literally a meaningless statement. I mean, the Constitution quite deliberately forbids all mention of God. Well, I should say omits all mention of God, let alone of Jesus. And though the Declaration of Independence mentions a creator, it very specifically doesn't say that this creator intervenes. Most of the people who wrote the Declaration were deists, not theists. It's true to say the majority of believers in America are Christian, but that's a banal fact. Many of them, I know from going and debating with them on my book tour, when you go to their churches, are full themselves of doubt. In other words, people who've responded saying they're Christian are very full of doubt and skepticism. And the figure you don't mention, but perhaps I could introduce it, is that perhaps as many as 16% of people now identify as having no faith of any kind, and that's double what it was a decade ago. It's the fastest growing group in the United States.
Ken
Blackwell, yes, there's a real crisis for faith in this country now.
Ken Blackwell, off of what Christopher just said, is there a crisis of faith in this country? Do you doubt at all that this is a Christian nation?
No, I really don't doubt that. If you look at the precepts that the foundation is built on, it is a nation that does not have a naked public square, but one that is built on a moral foundation. Now, I think it's very clear.
Doesn't make it Christian.
That it ebbs and flows in our 232-year history. But from George Washington and Abraham Lincoln to our latter-day presidents, there has been a fundamental understanding that it is that moral foundation based on Judeo-Christian precepts.
Okay, I find myself agreeing with Christopher Hitchens and disagreeing with Ken Blackwell. What about you? 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-IE or talkback at issuesetc.org. Now, I do disagree with Christopher Hitchens in this. He says that to call America a Christian nation is an entirely meaningless statement. It isn't a meaningless statement. Demographically, we can still call this a Christian nation as we would call, say, what? Western Europe, Christian civilization. And then if it becomes majority Muslim, we would call it a Muslim civilization, wouldn't we? Demographically, sociologically. But I agree with Christopher Hitchens in this. Founding documents, no mention of Jesus. And if there's no Jesus, it's not Christian. I'm sorry, you can have a generic God. That doesn't make it Christian. And while the Declaration of Independence does mention a creator, I think Hitchens is right. The picture of the creator that it paints is one that, kind of like daddy teaching his daughter to ride a bike without training wheels. He just gets you going, pushes you, and when you're able to pedal on your own, he lets you ride around on your own. Not an intervening God, one that we find in Christianity. And he makes a good point when Ken Blackwell says, well, this country has a moral foundation. Well, of course it does, but Hitchens says, that doesn't make it Christian. And he's right. Do you agree or disagree? 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-IE or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Christopher
Hitchens. Wrong, I'm afraid. It's just flat out wrong. It's based on what Thomas Jefferson called a wall of separation between politics and religion. When the people of Danbury, when the Baptists, such to say, of Danbury, Connecticut, wrote to him asking for protection, they were asking for protection from whom, Mr. Blackwell? Do you remember?
Well, listen.
From the Congregationalists of Danbury, Connecticut, who didn't consider them to be real Americans.
Christopher, can I have a word in edgewise?
By all means.
There is a separation of church and state. There is not a separation of faith and politics. And there has never been the presumption that we run our day-to-day lives through a faithless prism when we make our decisions. We're not told that we have to leave our faith at the public square's edge. So it is just flat-out nonsense to suggest that this country was built on anything other than an understanding of Judeo-Christian principles and precepts that give us the moral foundation that allows free market enterprise and the primacy of the individual in our political system.
Okay. Look, it's odd to find myself agreeing with Christopher Hitchens, but Ken Blackwell has set up a straw man here. He said, well, you know, there is separation of church and state, but we don't look through a faithless prism in our everyday lives. But that's not the question. The question is America a Christian nation? only sociologically or demographically could it be called a Christian nation, just as you might call any other country that has a majority ostensibly Christian, nominally Christian population, a Christian nation. But in its founding philosophies, in its basic, the tenets upon which it is built, the laws upon which it is built, is it distinctly Christian? No. Is it moral? Yes, it is moral, but almost what country isn't in some sense? What country doesn't have a moral foundation in some sense? So to set up the straw man that, well, are you saying we can't bring our faith into the public square? I don't think that's what Hitchens is saying. I just think he's saying, if you look at the documents that make America, America, they are not Christian documents. And I think the strongest point Hitchens makes is that in the U.S. Constitution, there's no mention of Jesus. And I don't know how you can, how, no matter how you cut the hot dog, if there's no Jesus there, it isn't Christian. Whether it's the Constitution or your pastor's sermon, if there's no Jesus there, it may be moral. It may have a moral foundation, but it isn't Christian. If there's no Jesus in the songs you sing, they aren't Christian songs. They may be moral songs, they may be God songs, but they're not Christian songs. If there's no Jesus in the sermons you hear on Sunday morning, it may be moral, it may be good, it may even be right in a moral sense, but it isn't Christian. And if there's no Jesus in the Constitution or the other founding documents of the United States, we can't say the nation is Christian, no matter how many Christians there are in the nation. Now, does that mean that we can't bring our faith into the public square? No, I think it means quite the opposite, that in spite of the fact that we're not a Christian nation in any shape, matter, or form other than that we have a nominally Christian population, you can still bring your faith into the public square. If Christopher Hitchens wants to bring his non-faith into the public square, he's welcome to do it. And if Ken Blackall wants to bring his Christian faith, or if I want to bring my Christian faith, or if you want to bring your Christian faith into the public square, inform your decisions on a daily basis, you're free to do it too. I'm more concerned not about the primary message of the U.S. Constitution and founding documents. I'm more concerned about the primary message of Christianity. One might ask the second question. If America isn't a Christian nation, is American Christianity still Christian? Given what it says every Sunday, what it sings and prays every Sunday? Or is it simply moral? Is Christianity now in America a morality rather than a faith in Christ, given what is preached and prayed and sung and taught Sunday after Sunday in most of our churches? I think I could make a strong case that what is preached and prayed and sung and taught in most of our churches on Sunday morning, whether they call themselves Christian or not, isn't distinctly Christian because there's so little Jesus there, so little cross. Jesus is there as moral example, not as crucified and risen Savior. There may well be, pound for pound, more Jesus in the deist writings of men like Thomas Jefferson than in the popular pulpit today. Thomas Jefferson loved Jesus as a moral teacher and a moral example. Read what he said. As a political philosopher, as a philosopher, of a moral philosopher, an ethical philosopher, Thomas Jefferson held Jesus in the highest esteem. He just didn't believe that he died and risen from the dead for the sins of the world. And if you listen to the preaching of a lot of quote-unquote Christian pulpits nowadays, Sunday in, Sunday out, you'd think Thomas Jefferson were preaching. We'll be right back with Hour 2. Talk about the resurrection in the four Gospels with Dr. Peter Scare.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.